This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits. Enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform, Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 869, brought to you by Macroverse. Check out their new comic series, Darkland, on Webtoons and that Macroverse app. And iFanboy listeners just like you. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and this is my co-host, Josh Flanagan.
Howdy.
And welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 869. And we are here to talk about comics. Every week, one of us picks the comic they like the best from their stack of books. And we call that the Pick of the Week. And we're going to talk about that book, other books in the week, the patron pick, listener mail. And there will be spoilers ahead. So if you are worried about that, you know, we can't hold your hand. Just... you got to be able to live in the world. So good luck. Josh, in the last month, you decided to take a show off for your birthday.
Yeah.
And that turned out to be the only good week of comics in the last month.
And it should be noted I have not read the books from that week.
It was a very enjoyable week. This week was not so great.
Your Honor, it was last week. If I may address the court briefly. before beginning. It was my fervent wish to abstain this week. I had chosen to plead the whatever-th. I was informed by counsel that this was impossible. And so as we move forward, I wish that the court would be lenient given the circumstances.
Was it last week when we said we weren't lawyers? I think it was last week. Well, I feel like it's in the Constitution that you don't have to make a pick of the week if the week's not great. I feel like it's one of the amendments that the states haggled over. And
it should
Missouri
be.
Missouri was a holdout.
This is the first week in a while that I just was like, I got nothing. And I'm like literally, like normally I'm like, oh, I can make something out of it. This week, I spent a lot of time just not dealing with it. I was like, I don't know what to do. So the pick of the week.
After all that.
Well, if there's one person we're not going to offend, because A, they don't listen, and B, we've said lots of nice things. Pick of the week is Adventures of Superman, John Kent, number one.
Yeah.
Story by Tom Taylor, art by Clayton Henry, color by Jordi Belair, and letters by Wes Abbott.
Was this
and
Jordi
you might
Belair?
Be wondering.
It was Jordi Belair.
Yeah, yeah. All-star. She.
Well, the reason I ask is because I hate when they go teal for Superman instead of blue.
Mm-hmm.
They do that sometimes. And in this issue,
oh,
Superman's. The various Supermen's costumes, they use teal blue instead of like royal blue, and I hate that.
Well, I think in the beginning bit, though, is you can see that like the sky is a golden, like shit's going bad. That's the way that I kind of looked at it. So then when you get into Earth Zero now, is Earth Zero our Earth? Or, you know, like the main one?
Know.
I didn't
Who
think so.
Anymore.
But that's Earth One.
I don't know.
Through the looking glass. Well, it's blue on that Earth. So at the beginning, so just when he's colored by different
Earth
things.
Earth Zero is like color. The regular DCU. Earth One. Earth One is now Earth Zero. Now, right. Now is then. And
when?
Then is now.
Just
so
now.
So maybe we're Earth One now.
Maybe.
And Earth Two is now Earth Three. I don't know. Everybody shift
it
over.
Does, it doesn't.
Volleyball.
Let's blame Dan DiDio. Let's blame him. All right. So what
this
was
book
good
was
about
fine,
this?
Josh. This book was fine.
Yes.
That was the best I could say about any book this week. That was fine. This was a fine book. I really like Clayton Henry a lot. That really helped. Tom Taylor is a good writer. He has a good handle on John. That helped. This is a miniseries. That helped. This is somehow tying into the Injustice series that Tom Taylor, you know, got his name on. That's interesting. Although we don't know how yet. Like, this was fine. This was all fine.
Right. I like the setup a lot. And it is that... Ultraman from Earth
7.
From the one that has the Ultraman that has the bad version of all the people. I don't know which Earth it is. Like, I don't know if you're the kind of comic reader who's like, how do you not know that? And it's because I'm not that kind of comic book reader, because it doesn't matter.
Also, there was a lot going on this week.
That's true. But either way, I wouldn't have known it. Even if I'd won the lottery, I wouldn't have known it.
I will give you $1 million if you could tell me which Earth the Ultraman lives on.
Ultimately, what's funny, though, is that, like, I always hated calling it 616, but I know which one 616 is.
It's Earth 3. Earth 3 is Ultraman.
Okay.
Very close.
I like that, by the way, that Earth where all the superheroes are bad guys. I think that's fun. That's more fun than this Squadron Supreme. Or, no. What's the one?
Well, who knows if this is right, because this says Earth 0 is where Bizarro is. That's not right, because it's all fucked now.
Yeah, but I'm, you know, like, Tom Taylor ain't dumb, so there's some reason this is happening. But this seems to be the same John Kent who was in the last book, who's just in regular old DC. Yeah. Anyway, Ultraman is going from, if you don't know, Ultraman is the evil version of Superman from Earth 3.
we'll just say Earth 3.
And he's going to every universe and killing the Supermans there, and he kills them all. He always beats them.
Because he has a device that weakens them so that he can kill them.
And he's shown up, and we are reminded the one of the reason that John Kent time jumped is that he was taken as prisoner and put inside a volcano or something like that for missed years of his life. And by the way, he's recovered really well from that traumatic experience.
I forgot about that, actually. When he brought it up, I was like, oh, right. Yeah.
So Ultraman, the same one, is responsible for that. So this is coming to a head. I like that. That's a nice structure. That works really well. It's grabbed this thing that it wasn't super obscure. It was a big deal that happened, but we kind of moved on and forgot about it.
Another thing that was remarkable about this issue is that President Superman showed up and I was okay with it.
I don't think that's actually President Superman. That's the Superman and the...
Did I just say all black Supermen are the same?
Yes,
you did. Is that what I said?
I was going right past it.
Oh, no.
That's the Superman and the Red Tornado from Tom Taylor's Earth 2 comic from the New 52.
Ah, that's not President Superman.
I don't believe that's President. I didn't really read that book, so I can't tell you if he was also a president, but I think this is a different...
He calls himself Val Zod in here.
Yeah, because President Superman's like Zor-El or something like that.
Oh, well, There you go. But either way, like another Superman shows up. It had a kind of a cool thing. He's like, no, call Mr. Terrific. He knows us. He'll vouch for us. And I was like, that's kind of funny. You know, he showed up and he was really happy to see them. You find out that this Red Tornado is Lois Lane. Maybe you knew that if you've read that other series.
Yeah, you would. Yeah, you would.
I don't know. You know, the combination of all that stuff, really great coloring from Jordi Belair. The Clayton Henry art really was fantastic.
Terrific.
I think Clayton Henry wasn't the person that I thought he was. I think I was thinking of Clay Mann when I saw the name.
Mm.
And it was a totally different kind of thing, but
no,
more
this
book
came out. So it couldn't be Clay Mann.
Ouch.
I love Clay Mann. It just doesn't come out.
1 year per issue. That's
so,
anyway.
One of the things now that the secret identity is back, John is no one knows who John is. And so John needs to put glasses on or something because he's just walking around
in a blue and red outfit.
Blue and red and white outfit. And it's like, buddy, learn from your pops and put on some glasses or a wig or a fake beard or something, because you can't just be walking around wearing the colors of Superman and not put, you know, that's the whole point. But anyway.
That said, though, I dig Jay's jacket and scarf combo. I'm down with that.
That's my
jam.
It does look like you, actually, with the glasses and everything. It could be you.
Yeah. I do not have pink hair, nor have I ever.
No, but you can't see it in the outfit.
So, and like all those things. Actually, the page where we reveal, what is it, Val Zod. I really like that page. I like the way they do the cape. I like the scale of the way that the satellite is up there. You know, it's a great sort of heroic pose. I love these clean lines are fantastic.
Really nice. The inking is stellar in this issue.
Yeah. It's a whole Doc Shaner kind of thing going on, but with its own flavor.
Clayton Henry is even slightly evolved since the last couple of years,
mm-hmm.
where he's always had this kind of more clean style, but it seems like it's even slightly... I feel like it was more angular and now it's softer. But
you know what's really cool? So page 22,
yeah.
When last page of the issue, when the Red Tornado here says, I'm Lois Lane,
mm-hmm.
that drawing at the top is fantastic.
Yes, it's very good.
It really, like the coloring and the, like, see the metal sheen and it looks like a robot. It's really simple. I can't explain why, but I'm looking at it. It's just wonderful. And also the composition of that page is really great because the way that the panels are underneath are that sort of stack up underneath the body. It's a really nice page. And not in a way
issue.
That if I didn't like stop and look, and you know, there's no background in that one, but Jordi Belair makes it work. You know, skillful thing.
How do you feel about the non-caped costume on John?
I'm cool with it because he's not Superman.
Well, that's not according to what he's called in this issue. He's called Superman.
Well, he's not Superman.
He's
on Earth Zero. But like, I wouldn't want him to. It's the same thing. I don't want him to look exactly like Superman. If he doesn't have a cape, fine. Don't have a cape. That's not his thing.
I just need him to not be Superman. Just be something else. Super Team.
That's a terrible name. There was a time when they would have used that name.
There's no bad ideas in a blue sky situation scenario.
I don't know that that's true. I think Super Teen is always a bad idea unless it's like a 70s television program.
I read a, I don't know, 15, 16 books.
If Jack Kirby had thought up Super Teen, it would have been a good idea.
Exactly. You just don't like me. So I read, you know, 16 books this week or so, and this was in the top two. Of ones
okay,
I read.
Oh, good.
I tried a bunch of stuff because nothing was happening this week. So this was definitely in the top of the list.
Runner up, the sort of second, the almost pick of the week, is mm-hmm. contained in the books below, and I would like you to guess at it at some point.
Oh,
maybe afterwards.
Very often it's the number two spot in the rundown.
Yeah, usually the number two spot, and I don't. We never. This thing we never talk about.
Right.
But to me, the number two spot is always the most anticipated mainstreamist book that we would put there. The one that if they don't want to hear about the pick, then it's the one that we assume people are going to want to hear about because it's significant in some way.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's possible. That's possible. It's not always number two for me. That's the runner-up. But okay, after we're done talking,
I'm not saying that was my runner-up. I'm saying that's how
I'm saying after we're done talking before the patron pick, I will guess which one was your runner-up.
Okay. Okay.
So let's talk about The Amazing Spider-Man 915 while we wait. This is the big reveal as to what happened between Peter Parker and Mary Jane. And there's a lot going on here. This is Zeb Wells and John Romita Jr. And I don't remember where I was told this, but I was told those kids were not Mary Jane's kids. However, that little girl got red hair.
You told me that.
I know, because I was told that.
And I believed you, but when you said that, I was like, okay, I'll believe him because he's right more than me. But I also thought, that doesn't feel right.
Well, first of all, those kids would have to be less than 1 year old, and they're not. They're talking and walking and doing things. And the girl's got red hair and has the dimples and the cleft chin like Mary Jane. So I don't know what's going on.
Everything that is confusing is supposed to be confusing here, which I think is it's crafted well in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because like they know that. Right. It's not like some nerds who go, does it even make sense? Like they know that. But
the story of this is whatever. Like there's a bunch of gobbledygook that happened. However, the most outrageous,
that's because we don't know.
I just mean like this guy with the tattoos and the gods he was praying to. I was like, I don't, whatever. The most outrageous thing that happened in this issue, however, was on page 11 of your digital reader in the editor's box. And it says, remember this happening? See Amazing Spider-Man 894. They're using the goddamn legacy numbering in the editor's boxes.
I noticed that. They are ordering cake. They are eating it.
In front of our faces and rubbing our noses in it. And also in the letters column, again, they use the legacy numbering, although in the letters column, they put LGY in front of the numbers. They still use the legacy numbering.
They understood.
Someone at Marvel is trying to drive me into an early grave.
They understood that when referring to a book before, the number 8 wasn't going to help them.
Right, because it's been like 4 of them.
Yes. Right.
You're not wrong. I don't know what happened to this issue. It didn't really register with me.
Well, the thing that got me that they basically said right from the beginning, first thing was, we're going to start answering those questions. And I was like, yes. And then it was structured like that kind of thing. Like, you're totally not going to understand this for at least a month. You know, and at first I was like, I didn't even have the, wait, did I miss something? I just thought, they're going to fuck with me for a while.
Yeah.
And I wondered, I was like, is this fun for people? Because I kind of want you to just tell me a story. I wonder if like writers, so many of the stories have been told and been done that one of the easier ways to keep it fresh is to do the time jumping and time shifting and keep you confused about what happened for 1 year until you just accept it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Also on page 19, there's another editor's note saying, do you remember Amazing Spider-Man 555 to 557? No, I don't. That was 400 issues ago.
I like that. I don't remember.
I don't. It was a long time ago. It was a lot of water under the bridge.
Yeah. But that's I think that's one of the fun parts of the whole, like they're teasing you a little bit.
Oh,
Nick
sure.
Lowe is. Which
I
is
don't
cool.
remember that. I don't remember where
it was. It was a good last page.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't dislike it. I just was like, there's a lot of, I don't know. I'm just not into like big mystical gods, and those stories always
kind of bore
me.
That's fair. But if you're talking about resetting time and whatnot, it's kind of an interesting choice to. I assume we're making up some new guy, as opposed to that. It was Immortus. I don't know.
Well. I feel like
I know what you're saying, but like
you said, we're not going to have the full picture for a while. But I feel like Fantastic Four did a better job of revealing the big mystery and time jump in a very satisfying way.
Yeah,
I'm not saying this isn't going to be satisfying, but this hasn't done it yet.
I thought of that too, but at the same time, I have to give credit. Like, Zeb Wells has been writing stories that are fun to read and compelling where I hate the story. He's been doing that for a while. Like, I have not enjoyed this story. I couldn't tell you what's going on with it, you know, but I keep reading it, and you know, it's good for me to Junior. It's fine. Have you been reading this Mary Jane and Black Cat story?
Yeah, yeah. I've read every issue of the Black Cat. This is not by Kyle Starks.
Yeah, no, I was trying to beat you to it. I was like, well, I didn't adjust that. And I know exactly why.
That's fine. I've read every issue of this Jed McKay Black Cat saga. I've read all of them.
Yes.
So yes, I've read this.
Have
you read this miniseries?
Yeah, I have been. I think.
Okay.
I know I've read at least three of them. I may have missed one in the middle, but I think I've read all of it. Or maybe I missed the first one. Like, at some point, I just was like, you know what? I'm going to read this Jed McKay story. So I know I at least read the last one. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed, I don't know, it was different than the thing that I would expect. I think Jed McKay, you know, one of his pet characters has been Black Cat. And it's been really fun and interesting, especially in comparison to the weird phase that she had before.
Yeah.
I think I do not like delving into the depths of hell or limbo or wherever it is, but it actually works in this book. This is the same thing where there'll be a mini series like the Black King or whatever it was, the symbiote one, King and Black. And like, you know, there were a couple in there that were really good, even though I didn't like it. And I feel like this is sort of that, and that the way that the trio of people along with the demon whose name I can't remember.
Like
I'm looking
Sims
for it.
Or something like that?
Sim.
Like
that. Yeah. And you know, they kind of like him, you know, and he's very friendly and polite. And, you know, every time they turn, there's another, you know, sort of trick or a thing that they're not expecting. And then there's the twist of the reason that Mary Jane's powers weren't working was because Black Cat was a little, wasn't mad at her. She's trepidatious of her.
So I shouldn't like this, like on paper. Right? Like,
right.
For all the reasons you just talked about. Like, it takes place in hell. Mary Jane has superpowers. She's best friends with Black Cat. Like, all these things sort of go against what I want out of a Spider-Verse comic. However.
And yet.
It's very fun. And Jed McKay has a great take on Black Cat, which we've been, you know, I've been reading for years. And if you're going to go for it, go for it. I don't know. I don't remember how Mary Jane got these. Casino-esque powers where she has basically rolls the mystical dice and gets a different power each time.
She's Nico dial H for hero. Runaways.
Yeah, she's dial H for hero. It's a long-standing power thing. And the reason why her powers were not being very effective on this trip to hell that they're going on to achieve this sword, and none of that really matters, is because Black Cat's power is to create bad luck for her adversaries, and subconsciously she considered Mary Jane her adversary because Black Cat is in love with Peter again, and she's too afraid to tell her new friend Mary Jane. So that's why the powers were on the fritz, because deep down she's like, you know, and that was the reveal. That was the cliffhanger in the last issue where they were being grabbed by the tentacles. They were like, oh no, I like Peter again. And that's why everything's fucked up. So it's been good. The character stuff's been great. You know, it's fine. I'm enjoying this.
I don't remember that the bad luck power only.
I didn't remember that
only
either.
Was enemies. I didn't know that, and I thought maybe that's always been there because it really makes a lot of sense.
Could be.
Yeah, because otherwise, you know, everybody would be having.
I think it's fun. You know, Jed McKay's a fun writer. He's, and I mean in the best ways. He writes fun stories. And funny stories, and the idea that there's all these bad dudes in hell, including a bunch of Hydra soldiers and demons who are trying to get this sword, and they're just going to wait for Black Cat and Mary Jane to come out with it and then take them out. Like, I think this has all been fun. It's just
I think if you
weird.
Did it with a slightly different tone, it's not all that different from like a Vertigo, Sandman, or Lucifer story. Like, the
right,
actual
for sure.
beats of the story, but they made it super Marvel.
Yeah.
And it's funny because you say not incorrectly, like he's funny, but he doesn't necessarily lead with funny, because some funny people do that.
No, the characters can make legitimately funny jokes. It's just happening in the middle of these adventure stories, and
Yeah, his plotting is super strong in his characterization. Yeah. So
I'm just constantly impressed that he gets to keep telling his Black Cat stories. It's probably been like 50 issues. Not 50, that's crazy. But probably been like 25 issues of Black Cat.
I mean, they must be. Maybe 30. They're either making money or they're setting up the movie.
Right. And it's just funny reading this back to back with Amazing Spider-Man where, you know, Mary Jane is also a character. It just doesn't make any sense. But
well, that was the other thing, because this seems to be, this is an offshoot of Ben Reilly bringing Limbo to Earth, and right. that is wrapped up, but they're still there, and I'm fine with it. But yeah. I just had a little, because I had read Amazing Spider-Man just before it, and I was like, no, this is over. But whatever, who cares?
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
So if I had to pick this week, first of all, I would have been in a bad mood. But
yeah.
It might have been X-Men 20, which is a book I'm still impressed with every time I read it, and it's not all involved in Mr. Sinister or alien stuff, but well, then ironically this is alien stuff. X-Men 20, Jerry Duggan, Stefano Caselli, and it's almost hard to explain. First of all, Stefano Caselli is really, really a strong artist. I think I remember first seeing him on the Jonathan Hickman Secret Warriors book. But really clean lines, good action. I really like his work. And then, you know, Jerry Duggan takes these sort of ragtag X-Men group and tells fun adventures with them. Here you've got the Borg, the Brood. It's the same thing. They're fighting the Brood, which is also happening over in Captain Marvel. So it's kind of like a companion story. They even reference it here a couple of times that they're also fighting over there. So it's this nice little Marvel shared universe thing. And, you know, they're really going to town with Iceman's powers. He's almost like Swamp Thing at this point, like a little bit of ice shard. He can become and grow himself back once he collects enough moisture out of the air. So like they're really sort of stretching the limits of what his abilities are. And he does a great Forge, who is really, really good at building things. Obviously, that's his mutant power, but sometimes fucks things up and has to fix it. And like, you know, it's just Jerry Duggan is actually a very similar writer to, I was going to say Kyle Starks, but that's not what's in the script. Jed McKay, mm-hmm. because he's very funny, but he doesn't lead with that either, but can be.
Right. And yes.
This is just a really fun adventure X-Men book. I find myself being very bored with the Mr. Sinister stuff going on right now and not really interested in that. But this just seems to be a side book that's more adventure based. And
do you have a sense for that era, that early 90s X-Men? Because I don't know it. I've been around comics forever.
Yeah, the early 90s, for sure.
Mr. Sinister, Apocalypse, like that sort of stuff in the X-Men, just nothing.
I definitely was reading the early 90s. That was the, you know, the Jim Lee era.
I figured that's when that. Yeah, but wasn't that?
I don't.
Who were the villains?
Then? I don't have
that
a ton,
was this stuff.
That was also where I started to age out of it a little bit,
right?
And then came back, you know, in the 2000s. But there's a whole era where characters will pop up, and I'm like, I don't have any idea who you are,
right?
It's not Mr. Sinister, obviously, but characters. I remember when Monet showed up, and she was looking at every book, and I was like, where did this character come from? It just was an era I wasn't reading.
I don't remember that. I don't even know. But that's, I'm not. You know, I'm willfully ignorant to a certain extent, so I can't blame
you. You remember Monet because she was in those X Factor books we were reading back in the 2000s that Peter David was writing.
I don't remember it.
I know you don't remember, but you read her.
What was
anyway,
the power?
I don't even know what her power is. I don't.
Right, okay.
I probably read a 50 books she's in. So I remember why this was so good. So the whole meat of this was great. They were fighting the Borg, the Brood, and Forge is off with his own adventure with Monet, and then we cut back to Krakoa, where the woman in charge of like the gates messages Emma Frost and says, we got a problem. A mutant who's never been here before has showed up with her husband, and she, you know, they want citizenship. And Emma's like, that's fine. Any mutant is welcome. And their spouses are also welcome, which I didn't know that the spouses were welcome on Fuck Island, but hey, why not?
The first rule of Fuck Island is
the reveal is
you
that
have to fuck.
The reveal is that, the mutant is Typhoid Mary, who comes Harley Quinning into the scene, doing handstands with her swords, and that her husband is Kingpin. And he says, you know, Wilson Fisk is here requesting asylum by marriage to Typhoid Mary. So now they've added Wilson Fisk into this mess.
Interesting.
So He's still got his Aloha shirt on under his suit because he's retired Wilson Fisk. But
that's nice. Good for him.
I was like, oh, that's fun. So I just it's just a really fun book. I really do think this is. I've been reading every issue of this X-Men reboot, and it's been good. This episode is brought to you by Macroverse. Macroverse is proud to share their new comic book series in wide release, Darkland. Darkland is a delightfully twisted black comedy centered around the shifting alliances between the power players in Hell, just like we've been talking about, and the plans they have for Earth. A little bit of Game of Thrones mixed with Veep. It's twisted, funny, and provocative. Created and written by Evan Shapiro with art by Frank Calico, Darkland is a digital comic with full episodes released bi-weekly on the Macroverse in their proprietary Tap Story format. But it's also released weekly in shorter episodes on Webtoons in their perpetual scroll version. The full version of Darkland will have a digital collectible release in elegant landscape format for iPad or web, coming in late March 2023, which is almost here, followed by the trade paperback and collector's edition coming later this year. And here's your chance to get involved. After the digital release in March, Macroverse will be working with fans to generate ideas for an anthology series set within the world of Darkland, which will be voted on by the community as to which will get greenlit into production as a separate release. Similar to what Macroverse did with their previous series, Dead Town, and their upcoming series, Bushidos. That's lots of cool stuff coming from Macroverse, so get on board now. Head over to the website macroverse.world/darkland for more info, or go to Webtoons and search for Darkland.
Do you remember? Did you read Blood Tree number 2?
I did.
From Peter J. Tomasi?
I almost missed it, but I did.
So the first issue I liked, but wasn't sure.
Mm-hmm.
Second issue, I felt like it came into clarity what it was, and it's a crime procedural.
Yes.
And it's not supernatural. There's a fucked up serial killer doing fucked up shit, and this cop has to do something about it, and he's having trouble balancing his work and life. And I think that the second issue, rather than getting me further away, brought me in closer. And I liked the art more than I had, and I was impressed by it. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm still not into the art, but I get it.
I remember not liking. I remember commenting on it specifically before, and this time I was like, I don't know. It's working enough for me. And when it was over, though, my thought was like, wait, I want to know what happens next. And there's no better. It's no better recommendation for a thing. I really was because it was building momentum, and it was I was like, we're getting towards something, and they had to check the churches of 260 Bronx churches to look at the ceilings, and I was like, that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy the story more for sure.
Yeah,
you know, it's not groundbreaking. It's a serial killer, you know, making people up to look like angels. And the biggest thing for me was that they revealed that the cop lives in Goshen, New York, which is like 60 miles north of
like
the city.
I feel like that's not super unusual, though.
No, I was expecting Long Island, considering how fast he got there to the crime scene last time. But
you remember the Richard Price book, The Whites?
Yep.
I picture this guy like that, because they lived far out of the city, too.
Oh, yeah, a lot of cops do, but yeah. I just was shocked that, because that's far out. It's not like living in, you know, Long Island or Yonkers. He was in Connecticut, wasn't he? Or Westchester?
No. He was up the Hudson. He was in... Talk about something else. Let's go on to the next book.
He was in like Ossining or something like that.
There you go. It was Ossining.
Yeah,
that's exactly
I played soccer
it.
There. It's not that far on the train.
All right, well. This cop's not taking the train, though.
No, he's driving. I did not read Predator number 1. I thought about it for a moment, but then I decided no. No, I'm all right.
All right. So my concern previously was that Kev Walker was off the book. I love Kev Walker, and we have Netho Diaz on art, and it was fine. In fact, it was pretty good. It wasn't doing an imitation, but it wasn't so far removed that I was thinking about it once the story got started. The other thing I really liked about it was that. It was nice because I've been really enjoying that Predator book, and I was like, I hope this doesn't change. And it did change, but there's a through line to the other one. But basically, in this one, you have a preserve, basically, where the Predators are hunting people from all, like, across time. And you think it's a time travel story at first, but instead, they're grabbing people and then keeping them all frozen and then waking them all up at the same time. So they all find out they're from different times in the Predator life cycle, and they're being put in some preserve so that they can be hunted by the Predator, like a.
Are they on Predator Planet? Have we ever established Predator Planet?
We don't know. I don't know where they are, but you know, and then it's your spoiler, it's the very end, the girl from the first one shows up and she's like, get with me, so come with me if you want to live, you know. So
maybe I'll read it. You're very good at selling Predator, because I didn't read the last one until you sold it in the show.
It's enjoyable. This one wasn't as good as the other one because that was sort of like one woman against the world kind of thing.
Yeah.
But who knows what it'll get to. I liked that it switched up though. Like second arc, we're doing a completely different kind of thing, but it's not entirely unrelated. And I think that that's a cool way to go.
The Flash 794 is part 5 of the 1 minute war storyline. I wanted to mention this because it's been fun. I've had to really shut off my brain for some of it, but I've been enjoying this story by Jeremy Adams and Roger Cruz, in which this planet of time-traveling imperialists, not time-traveling, speedster imperialists have shown up on Earth, and they're battling the Flash family at such a high speed that the whole war is going to take 1 minute, so everybody else is frozen and basically, you know, frozen around them. And so that's interesting. You really can't think too hard about how speedsters interface with time or speed, because then it breaks everything. Like, I wrote an article with this on iFanboy a long time ago. Like, the idea that if they're running fast, but everyone around them is frozen to them, but then if they're running at normal speed and everyone else is frozen, because they're just hanging around talking here, does that mean they're aging quicker because they're experiencing time normally, even though everyone else, like, it's a whole relativity thing that breaks if you think too much about it. But there was a really great moment this week, which is why I want to highlight it. So this features the entire extended Flash family, like Jay Garrick and Max Mercury and Liberty Bell, everybody who's not been around for a while, including Wally's daughter, who wears Impulse's costume, at least for the starting of this issue. And they've been sort of collecting heroes because these bad guys use the heroes for like fuel on their ships. So they've been saving the heroes, and like they're almost like statues hanging out in this house. And the war comes to the house. These bad guys show up, and one of them is standing next to Superman. And you just see over the course of several panels, his fingers slightly move to the point where he can grab them and hold them. And that was a great reminder that he can also move very fast, not nearly as fast as everybody else, but like he can actually see something's happening and get involved, and then helps Wally's daughter defeat this person. And she looks at him and says, I guess you are pretty cool. Like, it was just a cool, good moment. Mm-hmm. Of recognizing that he is still mighty enough to help, even in his frozen state, seeing that there's this giant war happening around. It was just a cool moment. It's been an enjoyable book. As long as I put the problems of super speed relativity out of my brain, it's been fun and I've been enjoying it.
Cool. Cool.
Yeah. So those are the books we're going to talk about. Now I'm going to guess, before we get to the patron pick, what your number two patron pick of the week was, the runner up. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go outside the box here and I'm going to say it was Predator.
Mary Jane and Black Cat.
Oh, that was my other guess.
That was the pick for a little bit. And then I sort of looked back through them and I went the different way.
Oh, interesting.
Because of this. Mm-hmm. Mary Jane and Black Cat was exactly what I thought it would be and what I wanted it to be, which is a good thing. Mm-hmm. Adventures of Superman, I went in trepidatiously.
Sure.
I thought this could go either way, and I was pleasantly surprised.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, we had things to talk about.
I wasn't worried about that. I just wanted to register my.
We didn't even talk about Twinkies.
My unhappiness. I can.
Did you have a Twinkie follow-up?
Yeah, I did have a Twinkie follow-up. When we had talked about Hostess Snack Cakes before, I ended up talking to my wife about this.
Yeah.
And I said, it was two things. One, I had an Oreo, and I thought, you know what? Out of all the childhood snacks and things that we liked, the Oreo may have held up best.
Wow, interesting. Okay.
If you eat an Oreo today, it's very simple, but it's very good. It isn't like, oh, this is garbage. If you eat a Chips Ahoy today, it's garbage.
Right, comparatively.
Right. But an Oreo, and so what I was thinking, like, compared to, like, if you eat a Twinkie now, it's not the same experience, but an Oreo is an Oreo is an Oreo. And I'm not talking about a Hydrox. It has to be the real thing. But if you think about all the foods and snacks and things that you really liked as a kid, I think for one thing, most of them have the formula has been altered. So they're shittier now than they used to be.
Right. More chemicals.
But the Oreo has staying power. Anyway, as a result of this conversation, the other night when we were supposed to be putting the kids to bed, I went to the store Uh-oh. And I bought one package of Twinkies, one package of cupcakes, and one package of the round ones. The ding, not, they might have been ding dongs. Ding dongs or.
I was really hoping you mentioned the orange ones.
They didn't have them. I would have. Because the follow-up here is that yesterday I was in a store and they had a giant rack. And I just sent my wife a picture. I was like, we have work to do. And we each ate one of each, which means that we each had three snack cakes. Big mistake.
Yeah, sure.
Right away. But we went through them individually. We talked about them, not unlike Mike and Tom.
See, did your old Mike and Tom eat snacks episode? How did it go?
Yeah, we kind of did. The Twinkie, as I said, the Twinkie doesn't hold up well. It doesn't really have a pleasant texture. It is the most oily of them all. It's sponge cake, but there's very little sponginess going on there. And these were not unfresh. The cupcake, which was my favorite.
Sure.
It wasn't as bad as I thought it was. It wasn't as greasy as I thought it was going to be. And it really did have a nice, rich chocolate taste. But the texture wasn't great. But also the contrast between the sort of crusty frosting and the cake is nice.
Yes. It was always pretty my favorite. Good. After a while. It usurped the Twinkie as my favorite after when I was a kid.
And then the Ding Dong, which is sort of a hockey puck. That is coated with chocolate and also has the ubiquitous cream inside.
Sure.
That was the winner, which surprised me because I would have never gone for that. But it had the freshest interior. It was light.
Yeah.
As you can see, I did not take this lightly.
No, I'm excited.
We went full. I was very happy that Lindsay went along with me on it too.
We've delved into snack cake corner.
Yeah, yeah. So when I was in the store, I had the choice between the ding dong or the ho ho.
Sure.
And the ho ho is the Swiss roll
eat too many Swiss Miss cakes in college.
Swiss Miss. They make the chocolate.
The Swiss ones, they were the rolls.
Swiss
rolls.
Swiss rolls. Yes, other brand. That's Drake's or Durfee or something.
I would always get a box of those at Wegmans, and it was a problem.
Well, so part of this that happened, well, then there's the Zinger, which comes in both chocolate and orange, which if they'd had it, I'd have bought it. But part of it is that my wife didn't eat any of those snacks as a kid. I was like, well, you didn't? Sure. And she's like, no. And I was like, really? Like, there wasn't, a store around the, because that's what I would do.
Yeah.
Because there was a store around the corner where I would go buy stuff. I loved doing that and still do. she hadn't. So, really, her experience, her parents didn't let her eat garbage all the time, which for the 80s is amazing.
Kind of, yeah. Especially usually on our own.
So, that was part of the thing for that.
Good for you.
So I'd also brought up, do you remember? I was like, so you don't remember the Little Debbie cakes? And she's like, no. I was like, it was 99 cents. The box of Debbie's was 99 cents and you got five snack cakes in there.
Right.
I mean, that's, were they great? No, it was 99 cents.
It's value for your buck.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was the Little Debbie Swiss rolls. That's what I ate in college.
Right. Little Debbie.
Yeah. Little Debbie Swiss rolls. Oh man, I want a Swiss roll.
And then, our erstwhile partner, Ron, what is it? It's the Yodel.
Yodels. Yodels are also good.
He likes. I find the Devil Dog to be disappointing still because I want it to be a good whoopie pie and it's not.
All right. So that's the teeth. That was snack cake corner. Let's talk about the patron pick.
I want this to come back. So, I want you to bring something to the table next week.
I don't know if I'm allowed to. They don't sell those in Los Angeles. It's a federal. It's a crime. It's a state crime to sell junk food.
I disagree with that. No one has more burger and fry places in the world than Los Angeles.
If you're a patron at patreon.com/ivanboy, every patron can vote to add a book to the rundown. This week, not a lot of voting. I don't think the patrons were excited about the comics this week either, Josh. It was one of the worst weeks of voting we ever had in the course of doing this. But the winner was Stoneheart, number one from Image Comics, written, drawn, lettered, colored, everything by Emma Kubert. And the third generation, Kubert?
Yep. Yep.
Third generation.
Joe is her grandfather.
Granddaughter of Joe. And do you know who her father is?
I can't tell Andy and Adam apart anyway. So.
That's true. Emma Kubert.
And it may not be them. There may be other siblings. I don't know.
True. And, you know, they're a legitimate comic book royalty.
Dynasty.
Know, to the extent that we have that. For sure. So I was excited to read this when I saw her name on it. It was on my list even without the patron pick because of that. Even though, you know, as we talked about before, there's a lot of fantasy comics right now. So,
yeah,
you know, it starts with a map and you're just like, oh, man, I'm never going to remember this. And then I didn't like this. I was really, really bummed to not like this, but I didn't like it.
I went with the, oh, this isn't for me, as a method. And then I read it academically, I suppose, after I sort of realized that. Yeah. Meaning that, like, first of all, Emma Kubert did everything in this book.
Yep.
There were no other credits. There are some fairly bad lettering balloon errors, word balloon errors, where, like, the pointing in the wrong place, and it's like, this is all wrong. But there are elements of an older style of comics in here. There were a couple of pages where it's like, oh, she's studying her grandfather's work to a certain extent and trying to emulate it. And the thing about comics is there's nepotism, but she's doing the work. She's going in, she's doing her own comic, you know, in her own style. It is not super polished, but as I look through these pages, like, they're really thoughtful in their storytelling. And the rudiments are there if the art isn't necessarily 100% there. I don't know how old she is.
She's
storytelling is strong. Adult. The foundations.
Yeah, I mean, I actually didn't mind the sort of unfinished nature of the opening sequence that was in Against Gray. Mm-hmm. I kind of liked it. It had a very sort of, I drew this comic and photocopied it and mailed it out style, yes, which I appreciated. Like, it felt like a true underground indie comic in that sense. Once the story sort of moved to the present or whatever it is, I thought it lost a lot of its charm.
I mean, the first part is incredibly arch, and so I was like, if it stays this serious, I'm going to have a really hard time grabbing onto it. So I did like that change, and I like that we switched to color.
Too far the other way, because, like,
yes,
the main character, whose name I don't remember,
Shade
was too much in the second half. She was too much.
I was kind of all right with that part, but I thought the other characters that she ran up with were, like, I was like, okay, so she's got ADHD and she's running around in the medieval town, whatever. And, but, like, she goes and meets her blacksmith, she's the apprentice or whatever, and he is just fucking cool with her for no reason. Right. And he also looked exactly like another character,
the love interest,
that had shown up before. And I was like, is this a love interest or is he like a dad? Because either they drew him too young.
Right, no, the other guy's love interest, the guy with the stubble.
Right, but he also seems to be involved in the bad stuff. Who knows? You know, I read this and I was like, oh, this totally isn't for me. Like, this feels like it should be for a 12-year-old, like a 12-year-old nerd girl.
Not in a bad way.
And I don't – right, no, yeah, no, exactly. Like, not in a bad way. It's a young version of romance. And I don't just mean romance in the sense of, like, you know, kissing and boy meets girl or whatever, but in the sense of, you know, like a romantic adventure.
Right. A fantasy, not a story.
Yeah. But at the same time, as I look through this on almost every page, I see something in the layout, in the design, in the storytelling that makes me kind of smile. Because I'm like, oh, this is a Kubert. And again, like, it reminds me of Joe Kubert more than either of the you know, Adam or Andy. And I really dig that. I was kind of happy to see that, you know, Right. So that's the part I'll give to it. What's really interesting is how sketchy it got when the sort of monster showed up. It looked even more unfinished during that fight. And I like that kind of energy. And also, that is not unlike Joe Kubert either. Joe Kubert is a lot looser than you would think in some of the work.
Definitely. I think she's the daughter of Kubert.
She's definitely the daughter of Kubert.
The fuzzy red, creature from the 80s. I think that's who she's the daughter of. Kubert's the unsung third son who doesn't get as much attention, but wasn't pioneering the video game industry. We should give him credit.
Kubert Kubert?
Yeah, Kubert Kubert. Kubert Kubert. Just Kubert R. Kubert.
Just working that pyramid.
So,
have you played that game recently or at any point?
No.
It's hard as fuck.
All those games, kids these days don't understand. The first wave of games out of Atari were impossible.
Or to arcade games, which you had to pay a quarter for. And relatively speaking, a quarter was way more expensive then.
Oh, yeah. You got beating that first level at Empire Strikes Back. Impossible.
You got a minute. Yeah. Burger Time does not fuck around.
Anyway, I don't know what to rate this. Out of five, I'm give it like a 2.5. Just right down the middle. It wasn't, there were things about it I liked, but for the most part, I didn't enjoy it. And it wasn't, like I said, it wasn't really, it didn't feel like it was for me.
Yeah.
Which is fine. And totally fine. There's enough comics
out there. I think I'd say the same. 2.5 if I had to look at it objectively. Sticking with it? Nah, I don't think so.
Nah, I don't think so either. But I'm glad, I'm glad to see that there's another generation of Kuberts making comics and making them in their own way.
Exactly. That's the thing.
In their style, in their interest level, not someone trying to ape their dad or their grandfather, not trying to jump around pyramids like their father, like just making the comics they want to make. And I'm happy to see that. Even if that's not something
for
me. And
not making them for the stereotypical modern comic book fan, which is an old man who wants things to be like they used to be. And no, tell your stories, do your thing.
Yeah. So I was happy to see it, even if it wasn't for me, but not for me.
I will do this next bit because
I figured,
that's for me. Yeah. If you like this program, if you think, I know we're going to hear about Snack Cake Corner one way or the other.
Oh man,
there's no way that people don't react to that. And then I realized we inadvertently ripped off Mike and Tom Eat Snacks
again.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. I didn't mean to this time. You can go to patreon.com/ifanboy. There you can support the show. This last week, a new Talksplode came out. We are solidly fulfilling the promises as much as possible of all those extra shows that exist because of the patrons. Stay tuned for updates. That's all I'm talking about now. We are lax on.
I think you should interview Kubert, R. Kubert, on the next Talksplode. Find out why he never really went into comics like his brothers did.
ifanboy.threadless.com, where you will find 12 designs on t-shirts and stuff. I am at this exact moment, this very moment, my foot is on my Clint is Dead skateboard. I am standing on it right this minute. So a bunch of stuff there. We're very proud of all those things. ifanboy.com/support. If you don't want to deal with any of that Michigas, there is a direct donation link during PayPal if you just want to contribute in that way. Again, these contributions are voluntary. We appreciate when you do. It's extremely helpful. But if it's not a thing you can do, or you're like, I don't like the show that much, fair enough. But the people who do, we thank you very much. And if you've been thinking about it, it is extremely helpful. So if you enjoy this stuff, it helps. ifanboy.com/Amazon. You will find a link to buy the books that we talk about on Booksplode. The music on the show is always linked through that. There's a general link. So if you want to go purchase knockoff Chinese goods, that's the way to do it. You can go to I don't trust anything anymore. You can go to bookshop.org, or we have links where that's appropriate, which allows you to buy books from independent booksellers. There's a couple of ways to do that, but the independent booksellers are a lifeblood of culture in this country and probably others in terms of like getting like that first wave of getting new content. And when I say content, I don't mean it in that other way, but like new ideas and stories and thoughts. Those things come from books, and the bookshops and independent bookstores are the people who actually bring those to us and make those choices. So they need to be around. That's it.
I've been on a rabbit. I've been in a Qbert rabbit hole while you've been doing that.
Every time you say Qbert, I think we're talking about the comics guy, and I have to readjust. And I gotta say, like, I get it. It's funny. Not entirely happy with it. I want to be talking about Qbert.
The high score for Qbert was initially set in 1983 by Rob Gerhart, who had 33,273,520 points, and that record lasted for 30 years until George Lutz of Brooklyn played one game of Qbert for 84 hours and 48 minutes in 2013 at an arcade in New Jersey, and he scored 37,163,080 points.
Can you imagine the pressure?
Hours.
1 hour in, you're like, if I fuck up here. I mean, you get three lives. Yeah. It's not – that's amazing. I tried to play it. There's an arcade in up in Laconia, which is north of me, which is one of the – I think it's the largest arcade in the world. It's the one where you watch King of Kong. It was there. And they have a Qbert machine. But like most of the joysticks and controllers are not precise anymore.
Sure.
And so it's hard to begin with, and then it's not super precise. Yeah. 84 hours?
84 hours.
Like, does that – so the question is, does that person think, what am I – doing?
No, it seems to be his thing, because we can't talk about this guy anymore. So where are we at now? Okay, patron power. So if you're a patron, as we discussed earlier, if you're every patron can vote to add a book to the rundown, but if you're a $5 or higher patron, you get a superpower live on the show. It's called the patron power segment. That's how we thank them. And Andy Savage is this week's patron who we're thanking for being a patron. And Andy Savage, he has dry ice powers, Josh. He can create that dry ice smoke out of any of the holes in his body. Any of the holes.
When you say hole.
Yeah, I mean any of the seven holes.
Okay, so it's not like skin pores don't count.
No. The orifices.
Okay, I just prefer it for the listeners at home. When he said seven, did you count? Because I did. I went,
And I only know that number from watching Ant-Man. But yes, any of the seven holes.
I really thought you were going to say porn.
No.
Really.
I've gotten really granular in my porn watching. I only look for ear porn. So Andy Savage can emit that, you know, that cool dry ice effect out of any of his holes, orifices.
What's a other than stagecraft, what's a practical effect of that?
I mean, you could hide things in a smoky environment. You can make everything really dramatic, you know.
Sure.
At the end of a presentation, just out of your nose and ears comes smoke, and you make your exit. You know.
You could skip out of checks in restaurants, although I think you only get away with that once or twice.
Oh, here comes that Savage guy again. Here we go. Get ready. It's gonna get smoky in here. So there you go, Andy Savage. You can you're a hit at parties. You want to make it
Andy
cool,
Savage,
funky in here.
The whole time, I'm like, why is that familiar? And I was like, oh yeah, Randy Savage.
He's one level.
Randy Savage could have made use of that.
Oh yeah.
Ooh, I'm going to smoke this cool place up.
His entrances would have been with that. You know,
and they had a crew for that. He couldn't do it on his own, but they still did it.
True. Oh, he was the best. All right. Thanks, Andy, for being a patron. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That is where you can be a patron. And now, in the course of the Qbert and Snack Talk, we definitely limit at least one of these emails. So you I'm going to let you decide what we're going to do here.
Jeff R. from Ohio.
Jeff Reed. I'm just going to out him.
Connor and Ryan discussing the various Robins last week. Two weeks ago. Got me thinking. Connor concluded that you can't kill Damian because he's Bruce Wayne's biological son, and killing the character would drive Batman into a rage spiral that he couldn't recover from. So Damian is Robin for the foreseeable future.
I think Ryan said that, but it doesn't matter.
But what if... I don't see you saying that. You'd be like, whatever, get him over it. But what if... maybe he'd be happy. What if Damian wasn't Bruce's biological son? I've been reading the Batman crossover Legacy for the first time. There's a Batman family-wide story from 1996. Jeff Reed is great because he reads all that shit. Involving a plot by Ra's al Ghul to destroy the world with a plague. In that too close, too soon. In that tale, Ra's gains himself a new underling to enforce his will, and even promises this new hire that he may marry Talia if they're successful. This new hired hand is Bane. In an early scene, Bane and Talia are shown spending a night together. This doesn't seem to be the big leap to say that. It doesn't seem a big leap to say that Talia may wish that Damian was Bruce's son, but to her shame, he's actually Bane's son. Would this solve the Damian problem? Instead of it being a biological son, Damian is now one more adopted child brought into Batman's circle. Bruce has lived through losing a surrogate child a few times, so fuck it, it doesn't matter. And while it hasn't been pretty, those kids keep coming back to life and he can recover. Plus, this gives Damian a fun new identity crisis to explore. If Geoff Johns can retcon Connor Kent into being a cloned mix of half Superman and half Lex Luthor, can we retcon Damian into being Bane's son?
I just want to point out that...
Good.
I was going to say, we allowed Geoff to go long because Geoff used to be our columnist. So this is normally longer than we'd like to go, but we let him go long.
Yeah, but also he sort of did the work here. And I appreciate that. I was like, all of this is well thought out and plausible.
Yeah, I mean, yes, the answer is yes, but also they hinted at that a couple of years ago. They did a story where they were like, is Damian really Deathstroke's kid? And they had a whole thing where do you remember that? Where it was like,
Nope.
I think it happened in that book you were reading, that Robin book. But they were trying to hint that maybe it was Deathstroke's kid. He wasn't really Bruce's kid. And there was a whole thing, and it turned out not to be the case. Sure, they can do that all the live long day. Like, they can make a Bane. They can do Deathstroke. It could be, you know, Darkseid's kid. It could be anybody. It's just do they have the will to do so? They don't. And like we talked about a couple weeks ago, with him being positioned as James Gunn's favorite Robin and being the star of a movie, he's going to be the Robin. There's no getting around it. Could they get around if they wanted to? Yes, absolutely. They just don't want to. But there's all kinds of story ways to do it. You can get rid of anybody in any way. And that's good way. This would be a great way to do it. He's plumbed the depths of Batman comics, found a way out. And should they want to, they could do this, but they don't want to.
I mean, would you admit, or would you think that you are biased about this, but it is no longer an objective thing? Like, you're there's nothing you could do. There's nothing you could do. You couldn't read a Damian story and be like, you know, that was pretty good.
No, because he represents, you're too far gone. And this is what partially what we talked about when you were gone. He represents the sort of disillusion of the Batman books and family. Like, the Batman books are broken. This is what we talked about too. Oh. Like, and he broke them, and there's no getting around it. And while he's there, he represents the breaking of the books. I mean, they're just the Batman books are not good anymore. The ones that star Batman, and there's no getting around that.
Is there a situation in which you do like Damian?
I mean, I enjoyed him in the deceased books. We talked about that,
like, right? That's the one I was thinking of. I think
an Elseworlds situation, sure, right? Like, but
I think he makes a really good future Batman. I really like him in the Batman or DC versus Vampires. Mm-hmm. He's not a favorite character. I don't need to keep him. I've enjoyed stories that he's in because I've come to get used to him. And also there has been the adjustment. Like, for years he was written like snotty and you wouldn't like him or whatever. And I think they've matured him up a little bit. Giving him John Kent as a best friend, I think, has been really helpful. I think there are parallels now to Damian and Bruce Wayne that make it more enjoyable as a character. Mm-hmm. But you're not wrong. It doesn't fix anything. It doesn't save it. But I don't hate him. You know, I've been reading the Robin series for a while. I mean, at least it's in a way, it's at least a little bit fresh compared to a lot of the stuff that's happening in the Batman books, which are all over the map.
Yeah, I mean, this is a good, you know, it's a way to, they could do it if they wanted to. For whatever reason, they don't want to. For whatever reason, I would love to know someday from somebody, you know, why the decision was made to, you know, inject Damian into the story and supplant him. And not initially, not the Grant Morrison reason, but why the decision was made to keep him after Morrison killed him off, and why it was, you know, I'm just curious. I would be very curious to find out why.
I mean, I would say part of it is that it's so difficult to create a new character and make it stick. And this is one that you know, more or less did stick but he's not and really does work character. In that
he's
way.
Another Robin.
Well,
just another guy with an harness.
Yes, and that would be the caveat. But, you know, as far as like a new character, Damian Wayne is that.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I'd be curious to find out. Someone who knows needs to tell me what the conversation was. Mm-hmm. But Jeff, this is why we love Jeff and why he was such a great columnist, because he wrote those DC Histories books. He could dive into the histories of DC and pull out interesting things in them. And that was, I vaguely remember that whole Bane Talia thing. I mean, that was, we were in freshman year of college when that came out.
I definitely didn't read that.
I definitely read it. I just vaguely remember it. That was a long time ago.
Did you read weekly comics all through college?
Yeah. Went down to Comics for Sale every week. Or what was it? Whatever it was called.
Comics for Collectors.
Comics for Collectors, yeah.
That is a very unimaginative name.
Comics for Sale was Comics for Sale was a store I went to in junior high school.
Comics for Sale is worse than Comics for Collectors.
Well, he explained it one time. The proprietor of the store, who looked exactly like Mark Bagley with the shaggy hair and the mustache, that he wanted a store whose name told you exactly what it was, so there was no confusion. If somebody was looking it up in a phone book, I'm looking for comics for sale. And it was like, that's what it was. Like, I get the point. I get it. It's not very interesting, but you know, it's like AAA Locksmith. You know, it's the first name in the book when you open it up. Back when there was a book, you had to open up to find things.
Sure. Sure. I did exactly that on a job I had before. Like, I named a thing poorly, but it explained it exactly poorly from a marketing standpoint.
Right.
Although not, if you think about it. Fair enough. You know, it's true. You know, if it's some like winky nod reference to some shit that only deep nerds know, then is it good? I don't know.
Yeah. He's trying to be easy for like moms to bring, you know, back when that was the thing. Mm-hmm. When kids were at
the
college.
Android's Dungeon.
Right. So. We can do one quick one, or what are you gonna do?
No, we're done. We're done.
Thanks for writing in, Jeff. contact@fanboy.com. We everyone else got lost into the snack hole, which is also what we call Josh. So special edition shows. 2 weeks ago we had the Ant-Man review, that's what we just mentioned. Ant-Man the Wasp, Quantumania. Last week we had Legion of Superheroes. This past week, as Josh mentioned, we released our Talksplode interview with Ryan North. And this coming week, we're going to have our Media Explode show, and Josh and Ron are going to review Andor Season 1. Exciting. I think we're also going to look at The Last of Us Season 1. It's going to be a twofer, Andor and The Last of Us Seasons 1. Mm. And then the week after that will be Shazam Fury of the Gods review, although that collides with me having to go on a work trip, so these things may get screwy. The week after that, Booksplode, Josh and I are going to review Kingdom Come, which I have not read in a long, long time, so that'll be interesting. And then the week after that, maybe, will be Batman: The Doom of the King of Gotham animation review. It just depends on when it comes out digitally, but that'll be soon. So there's a lot of special edition shows. There's a lot of them happening.
You can go to ifanboy.com. Mm. You will find a library of over 1,200 shows and counting.
So last week we talked about extra shows, right? Like 50 episodes of Making Comics. Uh-huh. And I looked up Don't Miss.
Oh.
And how many of those were there?
A lot.
Not as many as we think. How many do you think? Okay. How many Don't Misses do you think there were?
Well, as you just said that, I mean, I feel like we did it for a couple of years, so near 100.
Oh, okay. I think you said more than that before. 164 Don't Misses.
So it's like over 3 years.
So Don't Miss, if you don't know, if you weren't around in 2012 and 13.
How the hell did we book somebody once a week?
Was on Tuesday, the day before comics came out, we would do a quick, it was like a 5-minute show with a creator who was pitching one of their books that was coming out the next day. So like Don't Miss Happy Number One with Grant Morrison, or Batman 13 with Scott Snyder, or Star Wars Number One with Brian Wood, or Captain Marvel Number Nine with Kelly Sue DeConnick, or Battle Pug with Mike Norton. So Once a Crowded Sky with Tom King, who plugged his novel. So we would do It was like 5 or 10 minutes. It wasn't long. Don't miss this book.
I feel like
book.
They got longer. But
that was what we did that for 164 episodes plus 50 of Don't Miss equals 94. No.
Make Comics.
104? Yeah, 104.
162 plus 50, yes.
Yeah. So 214. Those shows aren't on the feed. So you can find over 1,200 shows on our feed currently. Those other shows don't exist in this feed. But total shows we did – over 1,300 shows. It's a lot of shows.
So those are what I think about a
comedy. How do we do all that?
Also, I can't imagine. I can't book anybody anymore because I'm not on Twitter and I'm old. But like back then, I guess we had the. Like
that
it was,
that
mean,
was
it
the heyday. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, if you liked the bit that the Jeffrey did, like his stuff's all there and it's pretty evergreen.
Yeah, I think, look up, you know, DC Histories, iFanboy. Yeah. You'll find tons of great articles he did about the history of DC Comics. Really, really interesting stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, super. And it, like I said, it holds up. It's still there. You're gonna find something really cool in each of those. You can follow us at iFanboy Comics on Instagram. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. We also will say there, hey, the show's out. We'll do that. Sometimes it's the best of the week in panels. You can follow Connor and I also on Instagram at CS Kilpatrick and at JA Flanagan. The whole thing's mostly butts now. I don't think you'll get to us. I don't think
Instagram
you can follow us, but there's butts and then and recipes and,
so
and
clearly we know what your apartment says. I've noticed
every
that.
Once in a while they think I'm really into women working out, and I have to be like, I'm not. I mean, you know, I like pretty girls, but like I don't really want that all the time.
I actually counted.
Very difficult. Go ahead.
I counted the other day, and it was. One out of every three posts was an ad. Mm-hmm. Like every third post was an ad. And then after a certain while, you got further down the feed, then it was one out of every six. But it was.
Right.
It's way worse than it used to be in terms of like,
but
what am I looking at? Oh, it's an ad.
But
what
also in oh, terms of like.
Oh, no, the
in
algorithm.
Terms of like the people who you went there to follow and know about.
Yeah.
They're gone.
Yeah. Because of the algorithm.
Which, right. Well, I mean, the reason I was there was to. Connect with the people. Like, I don't know that that's what they say, but like now I'm just seeing a bunch of shit from people I don't know that's vaguely amusing.
Yeah, I mean, I keep turning off recommended posts every 30 days, but I still get the ads. I still get like, you know, t-shirts and shoes because I made the mistake of buying shoes once from Instagram. I made the mistake of buying a t-shirt once from Instagram. And now it's like, sure, you don't want this t-shirt?
Guess what just came back to your feed?
Damn it.
Sorry.
Where are we in the script?
Well, two old men were bitching about social media and what
oh,
it's
that's
become.
In the script, yeah.
Snackics, you are at subscribe to YouTube.
Subscribe to youtube.com/iFanboy. That's where you can find this show. We put this show up on YouTube every week. People listen to it there. You can also find all of our old video shows from that period of time in which we were doing seven podcasts a week. One a day. We had one new show a day, and that's most of those were video shows, and you can find them all on YouTube.
More than that, if you're talking about Don't Miss... and Make Comics and any special editions.
I think before we did Don't Miss and Make Comics, we were doing seven a week. Mm-hmm. Five minis. During that year, we did the minis. Because we didn't do Don't Miss during that year. So it was five
there
minis.
There must have been special editions.
If a special edition show came out, it was more.
Seven minimum.
Minimum seven. Five minis, the regular full-length video show, and this show, that's seven. So, and plus, any extra shows would have been more than seven, yes. That was crazy. Mm-hmm. We weren't sleeping a lot. So... anyway, those shows are all on YouTube, the video ones. You can also leave a review for this show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or listen to podcasts. We would appreciate that. Thank you. A lot of hard work has gone into the show, and we thank anyone who will, you know, leave us a review for helping other people find the show. I am on my own this weekend, Josh. And
Kevin!
I kind of want to go get some Twinkies, honestly.
I wish that you could buy them in singles, and then you could really do a round robin of things.
Right.
I want you to figure out a way to experiment. Don't overdo it because you will regret it.
Yeah. Well, the problem is where I'm living. The two closest supermarkets are Trader Joe's and Whole Foods.
Right, but you must have a convenience store. You must have a CVS. That's where that stuff lives.
Oh yeah, there is a convenience. Yeah, there's a CVS.
Yeah, your CVS, or Walgreens, whatever. That's where they're going to be.
Oh man, I might just have to get a cupcake.
Yeah, I think you should check the cupcake. But also, if you see something else there, I'm not saying you need to choke down one of those golden cupcakes because that's wrong.
No,
orange ones. But
No. If anything, it'll be. Just a regular Hostess cupcake because that was my jam after a certain point.
Maybe next week before the show, I'll pick something up that's different.
There's actually a cupcake place near me that makes cupcakes in the style of the Hostess cupcake. So
that doesn't count.
They're only they actually might even be cheaper than the Hostess ones.
Maybe, but we need to talk about the highly processed ones that existed.
But Josh, I want the good one.
Can we talk about how I can't find a chocodile anywhere? That's what I want.
Hastening our early exits from this mortal coil.
Then there's zingers. Zingers were briefly known as no, because there was the Choco Bliss. Anyway,
we mostly stayed in the Hostess realm. I don't remember a lot. I mean, I remember the names.
Hostess was the premium shit. Yeah. Like, we didn't have Tasty Cake or anything like that. So, I mean, Enemans came in a larger package.
Enemans, yeah.
I didn't do the Drakes. Maybe that was more of a tri-state thing, but that was down market. That and Little Debbie were down market from Hostess. Hostess was the apex.
As a kid, we just ate Hostess. I mean, that was what it was. I mean,
well, they were. Here's the thing, though. This is important. They were in the comics.
Right. Exactly.
But you
Spider-Man
know,
Spider-Man liked Hostess cupcakes. Why shouldn't I?
You know what I wasn't eating? Hostess fruit pies. That's disgusting.
God, no. Who would do that?
They had one that had green pudding in it at one point. I did eat those. They were like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or something.
Josh, have you told this to your doctor?
I did this week.
It's probably a special test you can do where you'd be like, is there any green cupcake in there still?
I have to go do all my blood tests, but because I ate all the Hostess this week and we had a bit of a family emergency, I'm gonna put it off for a week or two.
You should tell them before they x-ray you, if you see anything weird glowing in my body, it's from the Hostess I ate this week.
Jesus, these results could only happen if you'd made... You know what? Let's move along. Let's move along, doctor. How long do I have?
Also, Hostess is never going to sponsor the show now. Sorry.
Why? We just sold a lot of snack cakes.
I'm Connor.
I would say minimum we sold dozens of snack cakes. Just
dozens of snack cakes were sold this week.
Yeah. Yep.
Our numbers spiked by a dozen. What's going on?
Dozens.
Dozens. Dozens of cupcakes were sold.
Multiple dozen.
Sponsor the show.
We have to stop the show.
All right. I'm Connor.
We have to stop the show. I love you all.